Let's continue our discussion of stocks with an in-depth discussion of transactions and how transactions take place and the costs associated with these transactions. But first, let's quickly dispense with the two phrases that you've probably already heard by now, bull market and bear market. Bull markets are favorable markets normally associated with rising prices, investor optimism, economic recovery, and government stimulus. Yay! Is it too late to get in? Bear markets are unfavorable markets normally associated with falling prices, investor pessimism, economic slowdown, and government restraint. Ooh, is it too late to get out? And where do these terms come from? Well, language is very tricky, but people will tell you that the term bull market comes from the fact that bulls charge ahead and they throw their investors up in the air, and bears are more reticent and reclusive, but when they do attack, they knock their opponents down with their claws. Well, folks, it's actually more complicated than that, and not that important, but if you are so inclined, if language is a love of yours, definitely take a look at the etymology. Is that it right? Etymology of these two phrases, because it is quite interesting, where especially the bear market one. Slide number 35. There are four major types of stock transactions. And in reality, the only one I really think is worth that to us long-term investors are market orders. You want to buy? Buy. You want to sell? Sell. You'll get what the market gives you. However, there are other types of transactions that you may be interested in. The one being a limit order. Because that says, look, I want to buy this stock or I want to sell this stock, but I only want it to buy it at a certain price or sell it at a certain price. It's selling for $25 now. That's the market price. It's bouncing around $25. But you're interested. Hey, I'll buy it if it hits $22. If I can get it for $22, I'll buy. Or on the other side, if you want to sell, okay, it's selling for $25, but I'll sell it if it gets up to $27. Those are limit orders, and they will only occur at the price you specify, or a better price. You might get a better price, but you're not going to get any price worse than what you have specified. The downside is you might never get it, right? The price, you say, oh, yeah, sure, I'll buy it at 22. It keeps going up to 26, 27, 28. Oh, well. Now, what's this stop loss and stop limit? Well, the stop loss, sometimes just called a stop order, says, I will buy this stock or sell this stock once a certain trigger point is reached, in which case it then becomes a market order. So let's say you have owned this stock and you're happy with it, but if it goes, it's selling for around $25. If it goes below $22, I want out. That's why it's sometimes called a stop loss. I want to get out if it hits anything less than 22. The problem with this, if it hits 22, it then becomes a market order. So you don't know what the price you're going to get. It might go down to 19 or 18. There might be some information that comes out that drastically reduces the demand for these shares for whatever reason, and it happens. Companies lose 10, 20% in seconds. So that's the problem with a stop loss. A stop limit is the exact same thing, except it becomes a limit order. It hits a trigger point, and then it becomes a limit order, not a market order, which means I will not accept anything less than when I'm going to buy more than when I want to buy or less than when I want to sell. It then becomes a limit. So that is very subtle, that distinction. You have to be careful about that distinction. Now, remember that you can use stop loss, stop limit orders to lock in profits or protect against losses, but they trigger automatically. If you all of a sudden change your mind, too late, by the time you get to the screen where you cancel the order, it's already been filled. It happens in, you know, milliseconds, so you really have no control over it. And here's a table that describes them in more detail. Really, the takeaway for me, as far as you're concerned in this class, is you use a market order. If you want to buy, you market order. When you sell, you're going to get whatever the price is. And these others allow you to do a little stuff around the edges. I want to protect against a big loss. Or, hey, maybe if the price really falls dramatically, I'll buy, but I don't want it at the market price. I recommend market orders. Short-term traders tell me that, oh, no, we always set stop loss orders or whatever, limit orders on our transactions. Because, you know, we're in it for a couple bucks on the upside, but if we lose a dollar on the downside, we want to get out. Well, again, that's not investing. That's trading, speculating. And that's why there's chocolate and vanilla, and some people like strawberry. Okay, now, on slide 37, we're going to introduce the idea of buying on margin and the idea of selling short. But we will not go into the details. Why? Because they're a little tricky. We'll discuss these at the very end of the semester. They put them in chapter 2, which I think is a big mistake. Buying on margin is the ability to enhance your return by borrowing money from your broker. Instead of having to come up with 100%, you only may have to come up with 75 or 50% of the purchase price. You borrow the rest. Selling short is the exact opposite of the way most people think of when they think about stocks. We think of buying low, selling high. Well, selling short is the opposite. You sell high and buy low, huh? All you have to know is what's on this slide. You are trying to make money when you sell short when the price goes down. And this is, we'll discuss this in detail later on, but this is what was going on with GameStop and the other craziness that was going on a few weeks ago, where there were people who were trying to knock down the price, and they said, oh, well, we'll show you. We're going to bring the price up, and that's going to hurt you. And that's exactly what happens. Because when we buy a stock low and then we want to sell it high, but if it keeps going lower, we lose. But when we sell short, if the price goes up, we lose. Huh? Everything's backwards. So this is all you have to know. And I'm also going to remind you, or just to cajole you, that these are things that you really don't want to do. They are very dangerous, and you can lose a lot of money quickly. So enough said about that. But that's all you have to understand. Buying on margin, you're borrowing to enhance your returns from your broker. Borrowing money from your broker to enhance your returns. Selling short, you're trying to make money when the price goes down. And they're both dangerous, especially selling short. Slide 38, transaction costs. Well, you know, transaction costs have come down dramatically from the 1960s, 70s, throughout the 80s, 90s, and now into the 2000s and 2010s and 20s with the rise of technology. The largest portion used to be the broker's commission. Deep discount internet brokers have driven the commissions down to as low as $5 a trade, and now we have Robinhood that has offered free trades. They weren't the first. There were two other major firms that tried doing it, but they didn't succeed. But Robinhood seems to have succeeded, and now the other brokerage firms have followed them because of competition. Have transaction costs really gone down? Yes, they have, but more and more of the cost is being hidden from the investor. And this was over 20 years ago when somebody called them the internet garbage brokers. And I said, well, now, wait a minute. Why do you say that? And my boss just told me to shush up. It's okay. And then he explained to me how they were actually, oh, I said, that's not very kind. They're hiding it. And he said, yeah, that's what's happening, because this is what you're up against, dear students. Slide 39. A deep discount internet broker offers trades for $5 or $7 or now $0 a trade. In the fine print of the client broker agreement is included a provision for allowing the broker to solely utilize exclusive stock dealers and market makers. The quoted price is simply the best price available. But at any one time, there are dozens of prices quoted as dealers and market makers compete for their buy and sell orders. Remember the casas de cambio, the money exchange houses? Yes, there were prices all over. You know, there wasn't just one price. The chosen dealer doesn't necessarily have the best price. Of course not. Instead of paying $20, you might pay $20.05. So you see $7 or $5 commission, or maybe $0 commission, but you don't see the extra $5 that you paid on a 100-share purchase because of the dealer's markup. You pay an extra 5 cents a share, that's 100 shares, that's $5. If you were only to get $19.95 when you sold, you see what's going on here? Right. The market maker is making money off of the spread between the best price available and the price that they are charging you or giving you when you sell. And so slide number 40. Now, I don't know if Scott Trade still does this because, first of all, they got bought by somebody else. But this was the disclaimer that they included on each trade confirmation email. And nobody understands what it is. Scott Trade Incorporated receives remuneration for directing orders to particular broker dealers or market centers for execution. Such remuneration is considered compensation to the firm and the source and amount of any compensation received by the firm in connection with your transaction will be disclosed upon request. Yeah, it might as well be Greek or plain song. What the? First of all, whenever you see a company put everything in caps, they're already playing with you. They want to make it look like it's really important, but they also know that you're not going to read it. Because when everything's in caps, it makes it harder to read. What are they saying? They're saying, look, we get a kickback. That's what remuneration means in this situation. We are sending the orders to particular broker dealers, market centers, market makers, and they are then giving back some of that order flow is what the that's what they call it, order flow. I don't know why it's a dumb name, but instead of calling it a kickback, they call it order flow. And in Scott Trade's defense, at least they prominently disclose this relationship in the email, where many others hide it in the customer agreement, fine print, and the customers are never aware of the relationship. So do you understand? It ain't free. Robin Hood is not free. Sure, you're not paying a commission, but you are paying more when you buy and paying less and getting less when you sell. Other companies simply don't do this. I mean, the brokerage firm I'm part of, we don't do it. But of course, we charge a commission, right? And our commission by today's standards is outrageously expensive. But when I started in the business, it was dirt cheap. So that's what's going on. That's the evolution of the industry. Slide number 41. The Securities and Exchange Commission says your broker has a duty to seek the best execution that is reasonably available for its customers' orders. But that's not a guarantee. The SEC requires brokers, dealers to notify their customers if their orders are not routed for best execution. Typically, this disclosure is on the trade confirmation you receive after placing your order. Hence, that's why we saw Scott Trade say, hey, you know, we might get a kickback. And determining whether or not a customer got best execution can be very difficult. Here's an example of the Securities and Exchange Commission trying to enforce the rules and not doing a very good job. For you law students or people who are interested in the law, check it out. The Securities and Exchange Commission was looking into making the costs more transparent, possibly showing the customer the difference between the dealer's price and the best price available at the time of the transaction, maybe even gasp, showing the total cost of the transaction from the markup or markdown. Needless to say, the deep discount brokers cried that it would drive up the cost of commissions and ultimately hurt the consumer, and the proposal died. So it is up to you, dear students and dear potential investors, to check if you are getting the best execution. But how can you, a lone investor, determine if you're getting the best price if even if the Securities and Exchange Commission has trouble watching over the brokerage companies? Now, if you do some searches, and I have some in the website in Canvas, there are some links to some articles that go back and forth where some people say, no, if Robinhood's on your side, no, Robinhood is eating you alive. And so, who do you trust? You know, I don't know. But I do know you are being charged. And just so you know you're being charged, know you're being charged less than if you had gone to Merrill Stinch or Morgan Stupid. I'm sorry, Merrill Lynch or Morgan Stanley. But still, you are being charged. And of course, the more you trade, the more the broker makes. Yeah. Slide 43. Now, speaking of trading often, high frequency trading is something that was in the news a few years ago, and I haven't noticed a whole lot about it anymore. Maybe because the Securities and Exchange Commission has basically given up, but high-frequency trading uses computers to transact large numbers of orders at a very fast speeds. Now, remember Liar's Poker? That gentleman, Michael Lewis, is an awesome writer, and he wrote a book. He wrote several books. Anything you find by Michael Lewis, you should read. But he wrote a book that's way out of date now, I'm sure, called Flash Boys. But this was very, very much in the news 10 years ago. So definitely read it. It's fun. There is little doubt that high-frequency trading has reduced transaction costs. However, at the same time, high-frequency trading firms have been accused of using their ability to transact at the microsecond level to front-run investors, essentially stealing tiny amounts of money from the average retail investors, and even large players like mutual funds and pension funds. One firm, IEX, is fighting back and has the backing of some very large players. So in the book Flash Boys, there's a hero. And we have a couple of links to some talks he gave. I forget his name now. Brad, I forget. But it starts with his first name is Brad. And he was really angry because he was one of these, he was working for a bank at the time, making very large transactions. And he saw what would happen when he would go to make the transaction. All of a sudden, the price would zoom away from him. And he'd say, what's going on here? Well, these HFT, these high-frequency trading firms, were jumping in front of him and grabbing that trade and then turning around and selling it to him at more money. So he was angry. He created a firm called IEX that had the backing of very large companies like American Funds, Capital Group, the Texas Pension Fund, the second largest pension fund in the world, T. Rowe Price, I think who else got involved? Maybe Fidelity. But they have their own exchange now called IEX. And in June of 2016, the Securities and Exchange Commission approved IEX bids to become an exchange, and they created what they call a speed bump, so that the high frequency trading firms cannot jump in front of the you and of course the big players and front run your transaction. So think about it, folks. If you think you're going to be able to do high-speed trading in front of your computer, you're outgunned. These people have massive amounts of technology and computing power at their disposal. I don't know if it's a good analogy, but it's like showing up at a war with a rifle, and these people have tanks and jet planes and surface-to-air missiles. And, you know, you're outgunned. If that makes any sense, if that makes any sense, and it is certainly very interesting, is in my humble opinion, obviously. But again, we haven't heard that much about what's going on. In the book, and of course, the book is from 2012 or so. Mr. Lewis posits, he guesses, and he knows that he's not right, and because no one's going to tell him, and no one's going to tell anybody what they're actually charging us. But at the time, from his best guess, and you know, from the experts he talked to, they figured that from the high frequency trading firms were siphoning off anywhere between $5 to $15 billion every year. That's, it's a lot of money, but again, when you're talking about the capital markets where trillions of dollars are traded every single day, it's peanuts. And let's take the difference. Let's say the average is $9-10 billion. That's how much is gambled away every March on the NCAA basketball tournament. So it sounds like a lot of money, and it is, but in the grand scheme of things, it's really not that much money. So one could think of it as a tax that we're involuntarily paying, such that we do get free commission trades. Slide 44. Now, this isn't a bit of an anachronism, which is a fancy way of saying it's old-fashioned. It's not really important anymore because of technology. It used to be that your broker and the people on Wall Street wanted you to buy in 100 share increments. These are called round lots. Anything less was called an odd lot. Oh, it still is called an odd lot. And they would charge you more to buy and give you less when you sold. And why was that? Because it made the buying and selling of shares much easier when they were in 100 lot increments, and made it more difficult, more time consuming, more cumbersome when they were in odd lot increments. So if you wanted, for example, to buy 100 shares, your broker on the floor would just yell out 25, and they would grab their hand and move it toward them. Now, you can't see me doing this, but I'm doing it. And that meant to the other brokers around them that he had 100 shares to sell at 25. If he said 2 at 25, he would buy 200 shares. If he pushed his arms away from himself, he meant he wanted to sell those. Now, that's all gone, folks. It's all technologically driven. But if he had 17 shares, he had to say 17 shares at 25. And he would move his hands toward him if he wanted to buy those, or push his hands away from them when he wanted to sell. So you see, that's all gone. So the odd lot differential, which used to be 12.5 cents to 25 cents, is now typically a penny or maybe 5 cents. So if anybody says, well, you really should wait until you have 100 shares to buy or sell, you just tell them, you know, you're ridiculous. Maybe it'll cost me an extra buck or so, maybe an extra 20 cents or whatever. It doesn't matter anymore. But you, because you're taking an introduction to business class, you should understand the difference between a round lot and an odd lot, and the odd lot differential, the extra cost of trading an odd lot. By the way, mixed lot, of course, is 100 shares plus something above 100, 117 shares. So I know maybe we should just take it out of the course and not ask people to remember it, but it's something you should tuck in the back of your brain and maybe call out, have to be called out when someone says, well, what's this about the odd lot differential? Why do they want me to buy 100 shares? You tell them, don't worry about it. If you buy 10 shares, buy 10 shares. Now, where do you find quotes? Well, it used to be that people would pick up the newspaper, but not so much anymore. Different sources will contain some, all, or more of these statistics, and we'll go through all of them throughout the semester. Always remember that the quoted prices are not the only prices available. At any one time, there are many prices available from many different dealers and market makers. The quoted prices are just the best prices available. Plus, you are seeing the prices 15, 20 minutes ago. You're not seeing the current price unless you pay extra or you happen to be at your broker's firm. And my understanding is that many of the brokerage accounts that you have now, they give you the current price. If you log on to, you know, whatever, TD Ameritrade, which is going to be owned by Schwab or Robinhood, they tell me. I don't have an account at one of these places, so I just call up my boss. And so here it is, dear students, the Wall Street Journal. And some people say, don't you use the Wall Street Journal for your class? And I said, no, I mean, it's okay. I don't think it's that great. And you can go to the library. You can't go to the library now, but oh my God, you mean you actually wait until the next day to find out how much your stock is worth? Oh, how 20th century. Yeah, very few newspapers carry stock quotes anymore. They used to. All the newspapers had the stock quotes, but now they don't because everybody just runs to their mobile device or their computer to look up the prices. So, in your assignment, one of your assignments for Chapter 5 is to do some research. And the libraries, of course, are closed. So on the website and in Canvas, you will see a presentation on how to use Yahoo and MarketWatch and Bloomberg. There are many different sites. I was really, really upset when they destroyed Yahoo. It's still pretty good. It's nowhere near as good as it used to be, but it's still pretty good. Google's financial site used to be horrible. Literally, I don't understand. You know, pretty much everything Google does is, you know, pretty good, and yet their finance website was terrible. When they became public, they said that they weren't going to have a very good finance website. I don't know why, but it's gotten better. It's definitely gotten better. So check out all the different free websites, CNBC. MarketWatch is the free version of the Wall Street Journal, but they're starting now to charge for more and more. I guess they're, you know, making a whole lot of money off of it through advertising. So definitely Morningstar is going to try to get you to sign up for their $20 a month or $30 a month. Bloomberg, you know, I'm not that excited about the free version of Bloomberg, but other brokers, other professionals tell me, oh, they love Bloomberg, but they pay, I forget how much it is. It's not really that much, so maybe I should join. But I'll tell you, if I'm going to pay anybody, it's going to be ValueLine, and we'll see why in the next chapter. But I should add ValueLine to this list. ValueLine is now giving people some free information where they didn't used to. Used to have to pay to get on their website. By the way, Wall Street Journal, you have to pay for to use their website. So please, check out the ones that we've described in the presentation, and also see if you can find any that you like. One of the students this semester talked about TradeView. He thought TradeView was a good website. I haven't never seen it. A friend of mine used to use Big Charts. He swore by BigCharts.com. I went there. I thought, it's not that exciting. But again, these were people who liked to do charting, so I guess TradeView, Big Charts. So you tell me which ones you like. Cool. Okay, go back over and make sure you understand how the transactions work, specifically the market transaction, market trade, and then the others, which are a little bit tricky, but you don't have to worry about them too much. Just understand that they only transact when you get a certain price target. And then the transaction costs, a little bit about how that's working. We know we're being charged. And now you know how you're being charged. Do you know how much? No. And maybe someday the brokers will be required to show you how much, but don't hold your breath. Okay, finally, in our next presentation, we are going to finally define and discuss these market indices, the Standard & Poor's 500, the Dow Jones Industrial Average, the NASDAQ, the MSCI World. Finally, we've been using them since the beginning of the semester. So we'll see you in our next presentation on market indices and averages. Thank you so much, as always, for being in our class. We are so happy and proud and honored that you are with us.